Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 21, and Text 21. This is the last in a series of prayers offered by Kardama Muni to the Personality of Godhead Vishnu. The place is deep in the forest where Kardama Muni has gone for 10,000 years performing Yuga Dharma, the process of meditation, and Prabhupada gave very clear and detailed explanations of not just meditation, like you might think what meditation is, but the process of, combined with the process of hearing and chanting, like something like Dhruva Maharaj. Not only he did meditation, and certainly he performed austerities, but he had a mantra, same one we just, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, Kardama was engaged in that process, similarly, for 10,000 years. Of course, when the lifespan is 100,000 years, 10,000 is one-tenth. So for us, that's something like 10 years. And the reason for this 10-year austerity and meditation and practice was to fulfill an instruction given to him by Lord Brahma, which was to assist in the subsequent process of creation to fill up the universe, or to add praja, or offspring, because Brahma, what we heard previously in this canto, like a lot of explanation, many chapters about creation. I'm going back a little bit, but in the second canto, chapter 10, the very first verse, it lists the 10 subject matters that are discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam or in a Mahapurana. Those are different kinds of Puranas. Mahapurana, Purana, and Upapurana. The Mahapurana has 10 topics, Purana has 5 topics, and the Upapurana has some combination of those 5, commonly 3. So the Mahapurana, there's 10 topics, and 2 of the 10 topics are, well, actually 3 of the 10 topics are covered extensively in this canto. Sarga, creation by Lord Vishnu. Visarga, the sub-creation by Lord Brahma. And Manvantara, the Manus and the descendants of Manu during their reign, during the lifespan of Brahma. So, during the day of Brahma. So we're in the very beginning of creation, because Maitreya has been asked by Vidura, please discuss topics about the Supreme Lord. And particularly he began asking questions about creation and the process of creation. Not so much like the technology of it, although there's plenty of that. It's, you know, he wants to understand very deeply the inextricable presence of the Lord in everything. He wants that. So that's what Maitreya gives him. And he Maitreya just finished prior chapters describing what Vishnu does, Sarga, and then comes Lord Brahma is born from the body of Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who has entered within each of the shells of the universe. Brahma is then to make the planets, like, you know, do the engineering work. Make the planets, make the species, different grades of life, and, you know, fill it up. So he starts to do that, and then Vidura says, what happened next? And specifically he asks, how did the Prajapatis assist Lord Brahma to fill up the universe? And so Maitreya is obliging him by describing the role of the Prajapatis in the process of creation. And there's a number of them, and one of them is Kardama. He's a direct son of Lord Brahma. In the sequence of living entities that are produced from Lord Brahma, first is the four Kumaras, that has been discussed in detail. Four Kumaras, and then their travel to Vaikuntha, and Jai and Vijay preventing them from entering Vaikuntha, the curse of the Kumaras of Jai and Vijay. They're coming, they're the first form. This is way in, you know, in Satyuga, the very beginning of creation. Hiranyaksha is killed by Lord Varaha. All of that's described. And then after Hiranyaksha is killed by Lord Varaha, then Maitreya is asked this question, what happened next? What did Brahma do next? So the four Kumaras, Lord Shiva, the ten great sages who are also to be Prajapatis, and Kardama is actually, he's number 11, the list of 10, and they're born from different parts of the body of Brahma. Kardama is similarly born, and Kardama is asked by his father, Brahma, please assist me to complete my work of the sub-creation. This sarga is the term. Sarga is what Vishnu does. This sarga is what Brahma does. So we can understand the Prajapatis are assisting Brahma, but they're receiving the capacity to do what they do from Vishnu. So Kardama has gone to the forest for 10,000 years to perform meditation and purification, tapasya. He then sees Lord Vishnu. He achieves perfection, like he's not a novice. He's an extremely capable personality. He's described in the Bhagavatam as a Mahayogi, and Devahuti is a yoga lakshana, very qualified, also in the mystic yoga process. So they're not married yet. This is his austerities. He sees Lord Vishnu, several verses describing his form before not standing on the ground, but standing on Garuda's back. And Garuda's wings are slowly flapping, and Lord Vishnu is standing on his back, looking smilingly in the pleasing atmosphere of this nice place in the forest that Kardama has found for his meditation. And Kardama is in ecstasy. The symptoms of ecstasy and bhava are described. He prostrates himself before Lord Vishnu, very similar to what Dhruva did. He begins to offer prayers, and we're at the last part of his prayers. Many things were said during his prayers, which I don't need to review. This is his concluding prayer. Text 21. I continuously offer my respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet, of which it is worthy to take shelter, because you shower all benedictions on the insignificant. That's him considering himself in the category of insignificant. To give all living entities detachment from fruitive activity by realizing you, you have expanded these material worlds by your own energy. Last night we spent some time discussing the process of creation, the purpose of creation, because the question was the purpose of human life. So the purpose of human life is intimately connected with the purpose of creation. You remember what I said yesterday evening? Vishnu contemplating, during the period of cosmic annihilation, contemplating two things: the living entities within my body that are in this resting state in Susupti. They should be happy. And the ultimate form of happiness is loving relationship with me. So because of their previous material attractions, they were within the creation. Now the creation is wound up, they're within my body. I desire that they can become restored to their position of loving attraction and enter into the eternal rasa dance with me. So compassion upon the living entities is one of the purposes or desires of the Lord. The second mentioned last night was the reflection of his internal potency, or Chaya Devi, known by so many different names, but depending upon the purpose of the address. He wishes that she has something to do, because he knows she wants something to do, and she's now dormant. She has nothing to do. And so he, compassionate upon her, he wants to give her something. So those are the two purposes. Give Maya Devi or Chaya Devi or Pradhan or the material energy personified some opportunity to do some service. So she gets to do some service, the living entities get to restore the opportunity, at least, to restore their original consciousness, their loving attraction for the personality of Godhead. So here, it's saying a little differently. To give all living entities detachment from fruitive activity by realizing you have expanded these material worlds by your energy. So, what's the purpose of creation? Yesterday evening, two reasons I gave, because from scripture. Now here's another stated a little differently, but it's the same idea. To relieve the conditioned souls of their attachment to fruitive activity. I'm sure you all remember this phrase, because I've been saying it over and over again. One of the principal responsibilities or duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly train the disciple. This is Prabhupada's statement. Thoroughly train the disciple in the abject futility of finding happiness through fruitive activities. You've heard me say that one many times. So here it is. That's because it's Vishnu's desire, or the creator, the personality of Godhead's desire. In order for the living entities to return to their loving condition in the spiritual world, in relationship with the personality of Godhead, it's essential to become detached from fruitive activity. Not from activity, but the purposeful pursuit of happiness independent from the Supreme Lord's happiness. Such a small thing. It's called love. And to restore the loving condition of activity, the attachment to fruitive activity has to be released. Oh, the Lord wants that. Kardama is the same, in a different way, but the same message. In order to help the living entity become detached from fruitive activity, through your own potency, you've created this whole display, the cosmic manifestation. What's the purpose? Detachment from fruitive activity. Attachment to the personality of Godhead. And again last night, the topic of detachment or renunciation. It's the artificial one is just give things up, and the complete form is see everything in relation to its source and act accordingly. It belongs to God, and we address it or interact with it as the property of God. Now, if you don't see the property of, you don't see the creation as the property of God or coming from God, have a seat. If we don't see the creation, or like, you know, look around and, you know, the creation, you know, what's proximate and what's distant, what's out there, if we don't see it in relation to God, how will we see it? You'll see it as it's up for grabs. You can make it yours. It doesn't belong to somebody. It might belong to me. Well, somebody else is thinking it belongs to them, but actually, I'd like to make it belong to me. So then you have conflict. Because over proprietorship, think about what's going on in the world and governments, and, you know, like that little island, a little group of islands off of China, that Japan and China are having like a big tussle over. What's the big deal? But it's a big deal. Just like a little. I was in China during their national holidays. Their national, like we have 4th of July, you know, Independence Day. They have their Independence Day. They have, like, you know, when Mao took over and kicked out the, whoever was there before Mao came. Being a big war, and they won, and now it's the Republic of China. So, like, their Independence Day is their national holiday. It comes in the first week of October. There were a zillion flags, Chinese flags, everywhere you go. Like, it's everywhere you go, flags and flags and flags. And say, what's this? It's a display of nationalism because of, because of this conflict with Japan over those islands. Just before that, I was in Hong Kong for like a national meeting there, you know, their annual meeting, and we were driving, came from where we were staying to the temple in a taxi. There were, like, several of us, and I didn't notice it, but one of the devotees in the car noticed it. He, did you see that taxi that just drove right by that man? That man's a Japanese man. You can tell because of the way he's dressed. And the Chinese taxi driver wouldn't even stop for him, because Japan is bad, because China is good. We're fighting over those islands. I don't know what the worth of those islands is. It's more like I'm big and you're small kind of thing. But there's all this history of, you know, Japanese invading into China, taking over parts of China. So, you know, there's a long history. And I don't know what all the history is, but I know there's history. And so the islands is just representative of all this old history of back and forth. That's one little drop in the bucket of, you know, when you don't see things as property of God, what happens? Besides war and conflict between one nation and another nation, you know, it's just big scale, small scale in between. It's hostility, it's competition, it's, you know, win-lose. You know, that's the culture in the world. One person wins, another person loses. And the strongest wins. So get strong. Whatever that means, you know, different things. So, in the absence of God consciousness, in the absence of seeing the creation, because that was the question that Vidura was asking. How is the Lord inextricably involved in the creation? So he's saying it very succinctly. Karma. By your energy you create. It's his. And one of the rules of like isms is all about proprietorship. Isn't it? Like democracy or communism or capitalism or monarchy or whatever. The systems of government are statements about who owns things. The people own things. The People's Republic of China. That's a joke. The people don't own anything. But, you know, that's the idea of communism, is the people, power, you know, the peasants. Because at one time, not so long ago, China was primarily, just sit still. If you don't like the curtain, move the curtain or do something, but be still. And so it was like the revolution of the agriculture, the economy of China was, like so many places, primarily agricultural based. And then this revolution took place, the People's Revolution. So now the people, the peasants, the agriculturalists, you know, the hammer and the sickle, the people that do the agriculture work, the people are the proprietors of the country instead of, you know, the other, we're not going into all this political analysis, landholders, and then the people do their agriculture and they give some tax to the landholder because he's supposed to be a kshatriya and give them protection from other people who want to encroach on their land. So he'll protect them so they can do their agriculture and they can maintain themselves, and they give something in tax to the, whatever the title is, the emperor or whatever their language says he is. So that system is removed. Now it's the people own it. But the people don't own it. It's the government. Anyway, the spiritual conception of creation is it belongs to God. And that's what he's saying. And that what's the purpose behind God's creating it is to help relieve us from fruitive activity tendency. Because the free fruitive activity tendency is what binds us to birth and death. You know, and the mix of so-called happiness and distress that's part of what happens in between birth and death. And then bondage that keeps the cycle going and going. And in that scenario, the relationship with the personality of God is eclipsed. Why? Because we don't see the creation in terms of Him. he disappears. And think about what modern education does. It's demoniac. It reinforces the very conception, because God's out of the schools. You can't talk about anything in relation to God. So it's science and whatever it is and whatever it is and whatever it is minus God. And systematically, at least in this country and many parts of the world, the educated people, through education system, learn how things work without God. It's very unfortunate. It increases fruitive activity. It's good for gross national product, maybe, but it's not good for people being peaceful or happy or living with their neighbor in a way that's nice, what to speak of nature. It's not just a flawed system, it's a wrong system. Anyway, back to Kardava Muni, he's appreciating the Lord's merciful nature, although those who are insignificant, like he's comparing himself, likening himself to an insignificant person, you've come. You're compassionate. Here's another manifestation of your compassion. Through your own energy, you create things in such a way to free us from fruitive activity. Because previously in his prayers, he's indicated he is one of those. I'm a fruitive activity person. Because I approached you to get something I want materially. And the thing he wants, it's going to be explicitly expressed by Lord Vishnu, because he does know. But he says it anyway. Kardava says that I'd like to have a wife of similar disposition to fulfill my desires. People take birth in this world for both of these reasons, to fulfill desires and to become free from the tendency to fulfill desires, and instead see the desire of the Supreme, because that's really what my self-interest is. So he's very clear about his limitation and Vishnu's magnanimity and the purpose of creation. And there he is, kind of like in between the two. So here's the purport. Everyone, therefore, whether he desires material enjoyment, liberation, or the transcendental loving service of the Lord, should engage himself in offering obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, because the Lord can award everyone his desired benediction. Anybody know that verse from the second canto? Akama, Sarvakamova, Mokshakama, Udaradi, Tivena, Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta, Purusham, Param. The Prabhupada is just paraphrasing. Whether you have no material desire, you have all material desire, you desire liberation, whatever it might be, serve the Supreme Lord with great determination, tivra bhakti. Because all the, whatever it is, any one of those three or combination, will be fulfilled. Because the Lord is the source of everything, and if you want something fulfilled, he's the one that can fulfill it, ultimately. Someone else may be his agent, but he's ultimately the one that's fulfilling things. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord affirms, Yayatamam prapadyante, anyone who desires to be a successful enjoyer of this material world is awarded that benediction by the Lord. Anyone who wants to be liberated from the entanglement of this material world is given liberation by the Lord. And anyone who desires to constantly engage in his service in full Krishna consciousness is awarded that benediction by the Lord. For material enjoyment, he has prescribed so many ritualistic sacrificial performances in the Vedas, and thus people may take advantage of those instructions and enjoy material life in higher planets or in a noble aristocratic family. these processes are mentioned in the Vedas, and one can take advantage of them. It is similar with those who want to be liberated from this material world. Paragraph. Unless one is disgusted with the enjoyment of this material world, he cannot aspire for liberation. Liberation is for one who is disgusted with material enjoyment. It's interesting, he just said it forwards and then backwards. There has to be detachment from sense enjoyment in order to achieve liberation. Vedanta Sutra says, therefore, atato brahma jigyasa, those who have given up the attempt to be happy in this material world can inquire about the Absolute Truth. For those who want to know the Absolute Truth, the Vedanta Sutra is available, as is Srimad Bhagavatam, the actual explanation of Vedanta Sutra. Since Bhagavad Gita is also Vedanta Sutra, by understanding Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanta Sutra, or Bhagavad Gita, one can obtain real knowledge. When one obtains real knowledge, he becomes theoretically one with the Supreme. And when he actually begins the service of Brahman or Krishna consciousness, he is not only liberated, but he is situated in his spiritual life. Liberated in this sense means no longer entangled in fruitive activities, like negative or neutral. Okay, now in this neutral position, what am I supposed to do? What does a liberated soul do? He actually begins the service of Brahman or Krishna consciousness. He is not only liberated, but situated in the spiritual life. Similarly, for those who want to lord it over material nature, there are so many departments of material enjoyment. Material knowledge and material science are available, and the Lord provides for persons who want to enjoy them. The conclusion is that one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for any benediction. The word Kama Varsham is very significant, for it indicates that he satisfies the desires of anyone who approaches him. But one who sincerely loves Krishna and yet wants material enjoyment is in perplexity. Krishna, being very kind toward him, gives him an opportunity to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, so he gradually forgets the hallucination. End of purport. I mean, this verse ends his prayers, but the whole section from beginning to end is just a masterpiece. I've said this in discussing the other verses, but they're extremely valuable for householders. I mean, for anyone, but particularly for householders, because Kardamuni is about to become a householder. So anybody who is a householder, who may one day become a householder, very, very relevant instructions how to approach household life, because household life requires possessions. Stuff, because the fulfillment fixed the curtain. The fulfillment of for householders, that there, for each of the ashrams, there's particular prescribed, the universal things for everyone, and for each ashram, there's their particular functions that are most recommended. So, for a brahmachari, it's the sacrifice of the hearing process. Study of the scriptures, hear from their teacher, diligently engage in those activities. And then the householder, the principal sacrifice for them is sacrifice by giving charity. And the reason for sacrifice giving charity is they're in touch with things that they need, that they're part of their duty in the household life is to have things to take care of their family. But because the senses are now in touch with things, the tendency can be, I'm the enjoyer of my things, and they're my things. And so to diminish the enjoyer potential and the proprietor potential, be charitable. Take what you need, that's fine. Utilize that in conscious service to the Supreme, and beyond what you need, be charitable. And there's grades of charity that are described in the Vedas, but it's a principle of grihastha life. So, the transcendental conception of grihastha life is going back to what we said before, seeing things in relation to the personality of Godhead. And part of the duty of householder life, in addition to possessions, is obviously family. So how to take that up properly? The a member of the opposite sex, and I'm associating with them day in and day out. So there's wealth, there's money, from the male perspective, money and women. And what does that do? It agitates the mind to think in terms of enjoyment, not think of in terms of, here's a service to the personality of Godhead. That's my purpose of taking this human form of life. Engage in service to the personality of Godhead. So, control of the mind and control of the senses are required. Anyways, all of that's discussed in this moving, how to take up household duties properly, not artificially, not, you know, this extreme, that extreme, but, you know, to do it properly. And then another is to go from sakam bhakti to nishkam bhakti through the medium of household life. Big one. So, as with cardamom, so with us, some attraction for the personality of Godhead, some attraction for worldly stuff, and being the enjoyer of the worldly stuff. And both are there. So how to navigate this territory where there's sakam bhakti to get to nishkam bhakti. And then, you know, what's the process, and in between here and there, what does it look like, and what does it look like on the other end? Doesn't look like in the other, we discussed this last night, but it doesn't look like on the other end is, I just give it up. Just like trash it. And walk away, and I'm a mendicant. It's you seeing those things in relation to the Supreme and acting accordingly. So that requires some spiritual strength and some understanding. Like, this isn't for sense gratification, it's for service. It's the property of God. So I should interact with it accordingly. It's the property of God. Very useful instructions. And just to like wrap it up very nicely, Prabhupada has done that in the purport. There's a nice wrapper and a little ribbon and a bow. Whether you're in this position or that position, or you want another position, you want to be in relation to God, you want material enjoyment, you want liberation from the tendency for material enjoyment, serve the personality of Godhead with great determination, tivra bhakti. Because why? Because he supplies everything anyway. That's the reality of the situation. So take up the position of serving him, and ultimately everything will be nice. Serve the personality of Godhead. Okay, so it's now 18 after we end at 7:30. Take some time for some questions. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, here Kardamuni is praying for a good praja, to qualify him to be an instrument in generating good praja.
Well, he's not. That's the bigger picture. It's not what he said in his prayers.
Oh.
Not what he said in his prayers. Go ahead.
So the thing is like, so the soul's previous activities, though, so do they qualify him to go to a particular father and lead a?
The answer is yes. So, look, do it both directions. One is, there's a soul who didn't complete the stage of perfection. They're due to take another birth. They're entitled to take birth of a mother and father of suitable qualification to carry them to the next position or beyond whatever they had achieved before. And then from the parents' perspective, we as prospective parents, if our consciousness is qualified, we'll get a qualified soul. But if we're not qualified, it won't be fair to the soul that should have qualified parents that we're not qualified. So the consciousness that we have will attract a corresponding soul. It's a very natural arrangement. So if I, as a prospective mother-father, wish to fulfill my duties as mother-father by taking the soul and liberating the soul from the clutches of birth and death, that's a really big qualification. I better qualify myself before I take up that service. And then one who takes up that service, prepares oneself by qualification, then though that mother father attract a qualified soul, and then they're capable of carrying them to the destination. So not everyone follows that mandate. There's more, go way down, it's like animal life. Just by the arrangements of material nature, there's attraction. And the insects and the spiders and the birds and the fish and the animals and all the species of life, male-female attraction, producing offspring, so human form of life can behave like that or even worse, or progressively, depending upon elevation of consciousness, how well I've understood the message and applied the message, become qualified. And then take the dependent out of the cycle of birth and death, because that's really the mandate for human parenting. Big mandate. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, this one sentence that is given there, the having little bit of tendency for material enjoyment and also having desire to love God is...
It's
a mix and it's there in perplexity. That's what Prabhupada is saying in Prabhupada.
Yeah.
So beginning...
That's the Sakam Bhakti. I have material desire, but I also have devotion for God, and that's perplexity.
So, the purpose of creation, as you mentioned in the beginning, is to actually bring the living entity to love God.
And another way of saying it in the verse is, detach from fruitive activity.
Detachment from fruitive activity.
Now?
But still, Supreme Lord is awarding for those, you know, akamas, those who want whatever liberation or material enjoyment, is still awarding those out of his compassion for the living entities. And
I'm waiting for the question.
And then with that, you know, the desire for material enjoyment is awarding and liberation is awarding, and but still I'm kind of this perplexed situation. And moving that from this situation to the pure Nishkama Bhakti is the process of devotional service, right? Like, you know, how do I move from this position to that position?
It's right there in the purport. But I invite you to go back and read the verse too, second canto of Kama. So it's from the discussion last night. By contact with the Supreme Pure, gradually one becomes purified. The degree to which one is consciously bringing my consciousness to the Supreme Pure, to that degree the pace of purification will increase. Like chanting japa. Something that we do every day. We can chant japa inattentively, or we can chant japa attentively, or somewhere in between. Kind of attentively. And depending upon the attentively, then consciousness becomes elevated or cleansed and so forth. So the process of bhakti is there, but my material attraction and thus my perplexity makes it slow. It doesn't have to be slow. The potency is there in the process of bhakti. So what should one do? To your capacity, sincerely, tivra bhakti. And then that takes one from sakkam to nishkam bhakti by contact with the Supreme Pure. So if you have a genuine process, it will carry you there. Just follow it. Know what the process is and sincerely follow it. And just like Krishna says in the 12th chapter, if you're not fixed, then follow the regulations of bhakti and you'll develop a desire to attain that stage. Another way of saying the same thing. Follow the regulations of bhakti, for by so doing, the desire to attain Nishkam Bhakti will become stronger. Now we have some desire, but we also have a mix. We can think about, you know, as much as we can about the desire, but there's, you know, we're maintaining the mix. That's just an honest statement of the mixed position. And it's not, you know, there's many, many in that mix. We're not, misery loves company. We're not alone. But the means is, it's already given, and follow the means. Tigra bhakti to attain nishkam bhakti. Even when there's a mix. Yes?
I have two questions. I'll start with one. I heard not from this section. Before coming to Krishna consciousness, I heard that one of the conception people carry is we need to enjoy material life till we become old, and that is the way we can get to liberation. The purport indicates also slightly one aspect of it, but the Prabhupada describes. So, how this conception is incorrect?
Well, it's just convenience. It's not what Scripture says. The convenience is I want, you know, I want to enjoy. The Vedas give me a means of enjoyment. I want to enjoy. So dharma artha kama, and moksha comes later. Maybe never. Mostly never. But dharma artha kama. because when I'm young, I should. It's the same argument that Daksha gives to Narada. You've deprived my sons of the means of freeing themselves from material desire by indulging themselves in material desire in the Vedic process. So then on the other side they would have enjoyed, but then they would realize it wasn't fulfilling at all, so now I want moksha. But now you just got them to the moksha position. You've cheated them. That's the mentality. That's why it's wrong. It's not... It's there for those who wish... Let me see. Those who have aversion to directly, they're given, and indirectly, like a workaround. I don't want to place myself in the position of dependent upon the personality of Godhead, although that may be the reality. I want to be independent, so I have a means of fulfilling my desire while gradually, hopefully, I become purified. And then the bridge, maybe. Okay, the other?
Prabhupada talks about when we get the real knowledge by understanding Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are situated theoretically one with Supreme, but then he describes person thus situated in Brahman, when he engages in Krishna consciousness, he not only gets liberation, but he is situated in spiritual life. So the question is, what does it mean that theoretically one with Supreme, is that someone is situated in Brahman or something
else? If their knowledge is limited to Brahman, that's as far as they can go. That's what it means. You have something?
I have a doubt. There's something. In some places we say that like we are part and parcel of Krishna. And I don't remember exactly in Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita that like Sudras serve as their Krishna's legs and Kshatriyas serve.
This is that the Virat Rupa,
yeah,
not Krishna's personal form.
Virat, okay. So, my question is, like, if that is what it is, like, we are all part and parcel of Krishna, then for all the activities that's happening now in general, who are not in Krishna consciousness, which may be part of Krishna's road too, and then how we differ that, like, because of devotional service, how we are differing from the normal activity, and then what is the...
How are we differing from the normal activities? I don't understand your question.
My question is, when we are part and parcel of Krishna,
that's the soul. Please make the distinction between the soul and the covering of the soul. The duty of the soul is one, serve Krishna. Depending upon the covering, I may serve Krishna this way, that way. And so the Varnashram system is this way, that way. Psychophysical nature. That's temporary. Not who I am. Temporary. So given the, you know, the covering of the soul, I serve this way, another one serves that way, the other, but what's essential is serving Krishna. So depending upon using this Virat conception, legs are used for walking, the arms are used for protecting, the belly is used for production, the head is used for wisdom. So depending upon where one is situated on in the material covering part of my existence, I serve accordingly. But the essence is serving Krishna.
Most of the world is serving directly or indirectly.
Indirectly. Most of them don't even know what they're doing.
Right. Then in that case...
And that's indirectly.
Yeah, it's indirectly.
Then. And detrimentally. Serving in a wrong way. Adharma. Or akarma. Vikarma, forbidden activity. That's serving in a wrong way. But they're serving in a wrong way. Because constitutionally we're servants. Is it possible to serve in a wrong way? It goes on all the time. That's what they're doing, largely. But they're all serving.
That is what I'm trying to understand.
Right? I'm trying to understand what you're trying to understand.
So how they are serving wrongly, that because they are not Krishna consciousness?
Because just rather than they're not, yes, but they take away the stigma of ism. It's, there's a, go back to creation yesterday evening in your home. There's creation, there's a purpose for creation. Supposing someone doesn't know what the purpose of creation is, like most people, then they're going to serve, and they'll serve in the wrong way. Supposing it's your birthday and they give you an iPad, and you think, oh, this is great, I can crack walnuts with this. That's not the intended purpose of it. Maybe you can crack a few walnuts and then you're eventually going to crack the iPad. And the purpose for which it was created, you won't get the facility. Similarly, there's a purpose for creation. I'm going to serve anyway because I'm a soul. That's what souls do. But not knowing the purpose of creation, I may use it this way, that way, the other way, according to the modes of nature. And, you know, with whatever material intelligence is being awarded to me, how to get my desire fulfilled through the creation. That's serving in a wrong way. Is your question answered?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you.
I hope I got a good question. So someone else? Yes?
Hare Krishna. I have one question about the loving exchanges. From Australia's class and today's class, I came to know that loving exchanges is very important in the life, one's life. And we have to love Krishna in order to give the Krishna prema to others. So, because we are so conditioned, like I'm so conditioned, I'm not able to get that love to Krishna, towards Krishna. So how practically we can practice that?
The answer is gradually. We'll go back to the mix. Some attraction for Krishna, some attraction for enjoying apart from Krishna. So you just, your how to question has the answer according to your ability, according to your, wherever you are in your spiritual trajectory, act in relation to Krishna. So some may be able to do it more effectively, some less effectively. You're going to be able to do whatever you can do. So you do that. Bring your same message as yesterday evening. Bring your attention to Krishna as best you can. There's limitations because of attachments and stuff, conditioning. As much as you can, follow the vidhis, the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti, and it will gradually carry you to Krishna. So that's what you do. And don't lament, oh, I'm in this condition. We created that condition by our past choices, so we can thank ourselves and then accept that position and then move. Making the connection strong, as strong as you can. And then incrementally continue, make it stronger. That's what we do. Someone else? Yes?
Maharaj, you were talking about the twofold purpose of creation, which is like the fulfilling desire and also to develop the loving relationship with Krishna. So, and also like regarding fulfilling the desires, like this according to Vedic injunctions, that step-by-step process.
According to Vedic injunctions, what?
I mean, fulfilling desires according to
Okay.
By following the Vedic instructions.
Okay, fine.
I'm just trying to recollect this verse, like in Bhagavad Gita, I think second chapter, like Apurimana Machala Pratishtam, where it's being said like desires are like rivers in the ocean. If you try to satisfy the desires, like one cannot achieve peace. Only the one who doesn't try to satisfy them can alone achieve peace, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even according to Vedic injections, one, the fulfillment, I mean, there are endless desires and it keeps coming one after the other.
Yes, they do.
So, is there any contradiction?
No. If you think of the 12th chapter, you know, this is the highest, we can't do that to this, if they can't do that to this, can't do that to that, to that, to that. So the Vedas provide means according to one's capacity. The purpose of doing what something way down here is to get one to this position, while I'm in these other positions, recognize the position of real peace is no longer material desire. But as long as I have material desire, and it's like dragging my attention away from being properly situated in this position, then there's a formula for fulfilling that while at the same time cleansing it, Krishnaizing it or spiritualizing it. And the spiritualizing has a lot to do with simply accepting the authority of the Vedas, because by accepting the authority of the Vedas, I'm accepting the authority of Narayan, because he's the source of the Vedas. I'm submitting to Narayan. Even my interest is I want fulfillment of desire. If I accept the Vedic system for doing so, there's submission to Narayan. It's weak, not the same as let me just, you know, sarvadharmam puritijam mamikam sharanam braja. It's weaker than that. But there's submission to Narayan. Just by accept. So, the way Prabhupada says it is this. One has not even begun the human form of life until there's submission to the codes of scripture. So prior, it's animal life. Even, you know, two-legged animal. Species isn't human yet until it's accepting the codes of scripture. So now I'm at the bottom of the codes of scripture. I want my animalistic desires fulfilled according to the codes of the scripture. That's as far as I can go. So there's some submission to Narayan. So there's some elevation, purification. And then. But what I really want is to be, not just fulfillment of desire, I want to be peaceful. So then you have to, so there's further progressive stages. Where those desires are then spiritualized, those desires are minimized, those desires disappear in the light of the higher desire to satisfy the senses of Rishikesh. So until one is in that position, there's other procedures or codes within the Vedas for gradual elevation. It's not a contradiction. It's just an acknowledgement of there are different positions. Of, on the one hand, or one end of the spectrum, gross material attraction. The other end, an ecstatic, enthusiastic desire to satisfy Krishna in love. And they're opposite end of the pole. And there's everything in between. So the Vedas recognize that, and according to one's position, offer something for gradual elevation.
From yesterday's class, I was inspired to hear something that attachment slows purification.
Attachment does what?
Slows
slows down
sanctification.
So the way to work on it is to increase the light, like you mentioned, do Tivra Bhakti in a process properly, sincerely. But then today, in the verse, it says that it implies that only by God realization we can get detachment from fruitive activity. So I'm assuming that is also, realizing God is also gradual, not like Brahman, Paramatma and Supreme Bhagavan feature, but even...
This is a very complex question. What's your question? Keep it simple.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Question is like, is it like only after realizing God fully, then we'll get detachment, or...
It's gradual. It's not... You've heard me give this example. There are switches, rocker arm switch, there's an on and off position. It's a one or a zero. So, and spiritualization is not a one or a zero. It's a dimmer switch. So then different positions in between. Proportionate to submission unto the personality of Godhead, detachment from worldly follows. And conversely, as weak as that is, then attraction for the temporary becomes stronger.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, and thank you very much.